The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I think most of us are familiar with the way the body and mind feed each other, interact with each other. That there's impact from the mind on the body, impact from the body on the mind. You know, if we're angry or frustrated, we may find our body getting churned up. We may find ourselves taking action out of those feelings. So not only does the mental climate of our minds impact how we feel, it can impact what we do. And likewise, if our body is feeling something, you know, if we're feeling pain or feeling some kind of unpleasant stimulation, it may impact our minds through reactivity, aversion. Or if we're feeling pleasantness, it may impact our minds through wanting more of it. Or it may just allow a kind of a relaxation and happiness to happen. So there's this kind of two-way street. Our minds impact our bodies impact our minds. The Buddha, as a kind of a psychologist in a way, talked about a particular aspect of our mental experience that is one of the keys of how there's this interrelationship between the mind and body. Kind of a key aspect of our mental experience that interconnects, bridges our mental experience and our physical experience. And that is the aspect of intention. Intention is a mental function, a mental experience, a mental urging that kind of precedes any action of body, of speech, or even of our mind. So when I asked you to make the resolve for stillness, what I was really doing was asking you to begin to see if you might be able to notice the intention to move, the mental impulse to move before the movement happens. This intention is it's actually a kind of a neutral impulse. It's just a little kind of getting ready to do, about to do, that precedes every action of body, speech, or mind. We can know we're going to move before we move. We can know we're going to speak before we speak. We can know we're going to even actually think before we think. That's a little more subtle, but it's possible to know you're going to think before you think. Know that your mind is headed towards an emotional state before it actually goes there. So there is this kind of impulse of mind that we can actually become aware of. So in and of itself, that impulse is a pretty neutral thing, but it's accompanied by something, some other quality or factor of mind, some other state of mind, let's say. It's kind of colored by a state of mind that gives it a direction, gives it a spin, and basically impels it in a particular direction. What is the motivation behind that intention? Kind of sends that intention in a particular direction. So, you know, we might be inclined to move because we're frustrated or angry or because we're averse to some experience we're having. Or we might be inclined to move because we're just so wanting that good feeling of the way it might feel when I stretch. Or we might just move because we've kind of lost our connection with our experience, and we're just moving out of habit rather than consciously having a reason to move. It might be more out of confusion or spaciness that we move, out of habit that we move. Or it could be that there's a very good reason to move, you know, that there's a kind of a sense of compassion for yourself. Your bladder's full. You need to get up and use the bathroom, you know, that's a very good reason to move instead of having your bladder burst, you know. So there are some times where the movement comes not necessarily motivated by, you know, one of these unwholesome tendencies, by greed, aversion, or delusion, but by a simple caring for the body, or perhaps by compassion or wisdom. So this intention comes associated with some state of mind or flavor that kind of infuses that intention and gives it a direction. And the Buddha pointed to this experience, this kind of conjoined intention and motivation together, as really the key, one of the keys to our happiness. That when we take action, follow through on those intentions that are associated with greed, with aversion, with delusion, we're tending to create the conditions for more greed, aversion, and delusion to come into our lives. If we act from those intentions that are motivated by generosity, by kindness, by wisdom, we are cultivating the conditions that strengthen those qualities. So this, the Buddha really pointed to this place of intention and seeing what the associated motivation is as being kind of how the whole of our spiritual path unfolds. Making skillful choices, letting go of unskillful choices. Now, this requires beginning to see this point, this choice point of when we intend to do something. And it can be kind of subtle. There are times when it's more obvious, kind of when there are bigger actions to make, it can be more obvious, or bigger upwellings of things that we're doing, that the intention can be more obvious. The motivation, the intention and the motivation can be more obvious. But often, and in fact what the Buddhist psychology says is that these intentions happen every single moment of our experience. Many, many moments unfold in a split second. So many, many intentions unfold in a split second. So just that movement of my hand, there were billions of intentions keeping my hand moving. Now, I didn't see all of those. I don't even think I really saw the initial intention of lifting my hand. Now, I could if I made that resolve for stillness, kind of like I suggested at the end of the guided meditation. You know, just if you let your body be still for a while, you may begin to recognize, you know, oh, there's a little itch, and there's that intention to move the hand, to scratch the itch. And so you see that impulse. You see that impulse before that movement happens. When we can see that, when we can start to see that impulse, we can begin to recognize the motivations that accompany those impulses. And there's where we really begin to see and explore these skillful and unskillful motivations that accompany our intentions. So these intentions, the word intention is kind of interesting because we think of that word related to conscious choice. Often I think that's the word kind of connotes, you know, I intend to do something. It connotes a kind of conscious recognition of doing. But this kind of intention that I'm talking about, and that's just the translation of the term for chetana, that I'm using the Pali term chetana for this little function of mind that urges us to do, that can happen whether we are consciously aware of it or not. And the Buddha said at one point that we can intend to act in the body and be fully aware of that intention to act in the body, or we can act in the body and be unaware. We can have that intention to act in the body and be unaware of that intention. So this points to one of the reasons or ways that we get caught and stuck in our lives, in that when we're not consciously aware of how our intentions are unfolding, when we're not consciously aware of why we are acting, of what our motivations are, we're just doing things, we're just blurting something out. We may see in retrospect that that blurting wasn't so helpful, but we didn't see the intention at the beginning. That when we are not consciously aware, essentially our conditioning and our habits of mind are making our choices for us. We are not consciously choosing what to do, but our habitual tendencies are choosing for us. And our habitual tendencies tend to be not necessarily the most skillful ways to approach life. We tend to have patterns around wanting to get rid of things that we don't like, you know, pushing things away. We tend to have tendencies about wanting to hold on to things we do like, wanting to keep them. And we don't really look at that. We don't look at that as, it's just kind of like, well, that's how I am. You know, when somebody says that kind of thing, I blow up. That's how I am. The Buddha suggests that actually we can kind of intervene. It's not, quote, just how we are. It's our conditioning that's impelling us. And if we start to bring mindfulness into the picture, we can kind of get a little doorway into those intentions and begin to perhaps choose differently. So, you know, a simple way to practice with this, I mean, I was encouraging you to practice with it with stillness of body and see if you could see that little movement before you might want to move. Another place to play with this is in speech. Just taking some time during the day and seeing if you can simply pause before speaking. If you can pause before speaking, if you can just pause for a split second, you've caught the intention to speak. You know you're going to speak before the words have come out of your mouth. And if you have caught that pause in that split second, just that moment of that pause, it's quite amazing what mindfulness can see in that moment. You'll probably have some sense of what's going to come out of your mouth, and maybe even why it's going to come out of your mouth. So just that little split-second pause can give you a window into this intention and a little bit of an opportunity to choose whether to follow through on that speech. Seeing that that speech is motivated by perhaps frustration or anger, maybe taking another moment. Oh, is there some softening I can make of that speech? Maybe say the same thing, but without the charge behind it. So just playing with that, we can start to see this moment of choice. And the choice to act to refrain from acting when the intentions are kind of skewed, twisted towards aversion or greed in particular, will support us to let go of that that movement, that feeding of greed and aversion. So in daily life, that's one way to explore it. And another way, in this daily life practice retreat that we're doing this week, I've encouraged people to choose some activity that happens regularly through your day and just see if there might be a possibility of noticing when that event happens. Something, the encouragement has been to pick something that you're intending, some intentional action. So going through doorways, opening drawers, standing up, sitting down, something that happens pretty frequently through the day. And then just see if you can kind of incline towards remembering when that experience happens. So we've been practicing with this. And maybe around this time in the retreat, those of you who are exploring this, you know, the practice of that unfolds kind of slowly over the week. You might notice only a few times during the day that you haven't actually remembered the thing that you've decided to pay attention to. You might notice, you know, three or four times a day, oh, I haven't been paying attention to that thing. And we've been talking about that being supportive because you're remembering that you've forgotten, that remembering itself is mindfulness, kind of like the remembering that you've forgotten the breath in the sitting practice. But as the week goes on, as the practice goes on, there might be the point where you actually begin to see the task, that thing. You begin to see yourself standing up. Or maybe even something has happened to you that in this exploration, you might know before you're going to do it that it's going to happen. And those of you who aren't doing this daily life practice retreat, I really encourage this kind of practice in daily life. Pick one thing that happens regularly through your day and see if you can resolve to remember to do it. It will be challenging, but over the course of several days, you may find yourself slowly starting to remember, you know, turning on light switches or and just various things, anything that happens regularly through your day. Clicking send for an email, that's a good one. So at some point in that process, you might kind of know before you're going to do the thing. You know, oh, I'm about ready to click send for that email. In that moment, you might be able to, again, recognize something of this intention and this motivation for that activity. You know, clicking send for the email is pretty neutral, but the motivation behind the message that you're sending might not be so neutral. So it gives you that opportunity to check. The motivation for turning on a light switch is probably pretty neutral, you know, wanting to have a little more light in the room. But it just gives you an opportunity to begin to explore this moment of noticing intention. It's a crucial moment in our practice. And to kind of, I like to think of this practice of seeing the intention around these tasks as kind of a little training wheel. It's like training wheels, you know. It's helping us to recognize the possibility of seeing that we can notice an intention to act before we act. That's hugely important for us in our spiritual life. Because we do tend to seem to think that so many things happen and that we don't have control over it. It's like, well, you know, somebody came along and pushed my button and then, you know, I did that thing. It's like as if they actually had the power to push a button and make you respond habitually, automatically. There's a whole string of mental events that happens between a stimulus and a response, and there can begin to be a little bit of gap in there. So I really encourage this kind of exploration. There's another aspect to this exploration around intention, and that is kind of the broader the broader notion of intention, the broader notion of maybe what we think of with the word intention, or more like a purpose. And I've been talking about this week too, this recognizing what our purpose is, what our aspiration is, how we want to orient our lives, how we want to live our lives, what are our priorities for our lives. This is very connected with our motivations. Why we do things is very connected to beliefs, views, ideas, agendas that we have. And all of that is kind of underlying, connected to a kind of purpose that we live our lives by. Now, some of those purposes may not be so conscious. We may have the purpose to earn a lot of money, you know, and that purpose may set a whole lot of intentions into motion. You know, the intention to go find a job and to spend a lot of hours at work, you know, that whole motivation of earning money sets into motion a whole bunch of activities. The kind of purpose which we might have to find a relationship sets into motion a whole bunch of activities. Signing up for eHarmony or something, you know, just the whole set of process of trying to find a relationship. So there's a kind of a broader notion of purpose in our lives that infiltrates down to these like momentary purposes, momentary intentions, momentary motivations for things that we do. And it can be interesting to explore, to reflect on what our deeper purpose is in life. What kind of purpose would be meaningful for us? And see if we can begin to allow that deeper kind of purpose to infuse our moment-to-moment intentions. And just take a moment now and reflect on what might be a deeper purpose for you. What might be an aspiration for your life that would be very meaningful for you? I think what's meaningful for you? What feels more deeply meaningful for you? And then in our actions, when we begin to recognize these moments of intention, when we begin to see a moment of choice, that moment before we act, perhaps we might be able to recall our deeper motivation and see if it might be able to inform our action. Even in a simple way, might we be able to build a thread between our deeper purpose and the intention of taking this next step or getting in the car to drive somewhere or going to the grocery store? It's the simple activities of our day, of our lives. I think when we can begin to tie that together, when we can begin to tie our deeper purpose into our simple activities of our day, you know, our lives become more meaningful. The last piece I want to offer as a reflection around intention is the... I talked some earlier about how our mind influences our actions. And this, I think the intention and the motivation that goes with it are really pointing to that. You know, that we have an explosion of anger in our minds and we may tend to act out of that. So that anger becomes the motivation behind the intentions of action in that situation. probably not with such good result. So our mind impacts our actions. Through this bridge of intention, we can also have the direction of influence go the other way too. We can have our behavior begin to influence our mind state, our minds. And the way it works is through this factor of intention, this little bridge between mind and body. So, for instance, if you want to cultivate peacefulness in your mind, if you're not feeling particularly peaceful, but you'd like to cultivate that quality, one way to do it would be to connect with that intention of peacefulness first. So that's the first piece. Connect with that intention of peacefulness, and then see if you can allow your body to behave as if you were peaceful. Now, this isn't a kind of papering over or repressing non-peacefulness. This kind of practice, you really have to be completely honest with yourself. Yes, I'm not feeling peaceful right now, but with this intention of cultivating peace, I'm going to see if I can behave more peacefully and see what happens. I'll give an example from my own practice. I was doing an exploration around impatience and patience at one point, and I saw a lot of impatience in my mind. It came up all over the place. I mean, I knew I was impatient, but I didn't know I got impatient when I brushed my teeth. It was everywhere. And so I was practicing with this. I was practicing with just noticing the impatience. And at some point, I decided to try to play. I mean, at one point I was in the Longs. Well, it's not a Longs anymore, but I was in the Longs at the time. I was in the Longs store, and I was shopping, and I noticed the impatience in my mind, and I also noticed that impatience was manifesting in my body. I was picking things up off the shelf and throwing them into my basket. So there was a clear acting out of that intention of impatience. The impatience was fueling my action and creating activity that looked impatient, that felt impatient, and tended to be reinforcing the mind state of impatience. And so when I noticed that, I thought, okay, I'm going to clearly know the impatience is here, but I'm going to see if I cannot let that impatience leak out into my body, not let anybody else in the store know I'm impatient. See if I could act with patience. And so I slowed down my movements. I clearly recognized, I wasn't trying to pretend I was patient. I wasn't trying to put patience into my mind there. I was simply acting with patience with the intention of cultivating that quality. And it took about a minute before my mind felt patience. A minute of smoothing out that behavior to see the impact on the mind. I didn't have to try to create patience so much, but that actually it felt more like just refraining from letting the impatience leak out into my behavior allowed that quality, that state of impatience, to go, and it was replaced with the state of patience. So this, our bodies can be a tool to help us cultivate our minds as well. It's a really powerful way to, I think of it as playing. I think of a lot of practice as playing. You know, it's like it's just a sandbox. Let's experiment. Let's see what happens if we try these things. So those are my thoughts about intention and practicing with it in daily life. Any comments, questions, discussion? Mary Ellen?
The patience piece resonated because I've been trying to figure out why I can never be late. I'm always like 10, 15 minutes early, no matter what. And it just suddenly occurred to me that as I plan my leave taking, I'm impatient for it to happen. So I rush. It's not even like, doesn't feel like rushing, but I'm moving myself more quickly than I need to. And it's a real impatience. And when I work on impatience, I also go to the store. And I think that I'm really kind of presenting a patient demeanor. I'm standing in line in what I consider to be a Zen way. And I'll realize that the cashier will say, oh, we'll be right with you, ma'am. And I know that I am not communicating what I think I'm communicating. So there's something going on that is very impatient. So you've just helped me look at that, and thank you for that.
And you know, it can be as subtle as an expression on the face as well. You know,
so I'm convinced I'm looking like a total Buddha. It's not what's coming across.
Yeah, so keep exploring that. The other piece there is, I don't know if in that place you're trying to look patient, or if, I mean, because that could be the thing where you're not actually acknowledging the impatience. Actually,
I think that's exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
I think I'm communicating. I think I'm trying too hard, and it's not coming through. And even with the, you know, being early, I'm just pushing myself somehow.
Yeah, so
thank you.
Yeah, play with that.
Could be
thank
fun.
Thank you. Over here.
A question. Is there a moment of intention behind every action or everything that happens?
The Buddhist psychology says that every single mind moment has an intention in it. There have been a few moments in my practice where I've actually seen like the subtle intentions to lift and shift my foot a little bit, and then the next movement of my hand, and it's just like watching, I don't know, it's like watching a kind of an automatic process unfold, because the mind can be in a place where it sees that the intention is conditioned. And then that conditions an action, and then there's another arising of an intention, and that conditions another action. So the understanding, and there have been times that I've seen, certainly not every intention. I mean, there was a one point in my practice when I was seeing a lot of intention and reporting that I saw, you know, the intention to reach, to pick up a glass. You know, I saw that before it happened, and then I would reach. And then, you know, so it was kind of broken down into smaller bits. And I was reporting this to my teacher, and he said, this was a Burmese teacher. He said, are you seeing the intention before every single action? And I said, no. There's no way. Because by that point, I had seen enough to see how much I wasn't seeing. And he kind of laughed, and he said, well, I can't either. It's not possible to see all of the intentions. So I think it is possible to begin to see some of the grosser intentions. Like before, larger changes of posture, like the movement from going from sitting to standing. You can recognize that. That's pretty accessible. Even in daily life, you can recognize that. The intention to go from standing to walking, from walking to sitting, from sitting to lying down. You can see the changes between those grosser bodily postures. You can know that intention. It is accessible in daily life, kind of through this exploration I was talking about. You know, if you pick, for instance, sitting down as something to pay attention to, if you practice with that for a week, you'll probably start to be able to see there's a moment just before you sit down that you know you're going to sit down. Or if you picked standing up, there's a moment just before you stand up when you know you're going to stand up. You'll see kind of the stream of thoughts in your mind that, oh, I need some water. Oh, you know, or thirsty, water, get up to go get the water. You kind of see that unfold. So we can't see all of them, but yes, there are intentions everywhere. And even, as I said, even before we think, before we are inclining towards an emotion, there's an intention there. Those are not usually so visible to us, but there have been times in my practice, in daily life even, when I've been just observing, just noticing what's unfolding, what's happening. And I've told this story so many times, but I'll tell it again, because it was such a clear moment of just this kind of thing, of seeing the intention towards an emotion. I had been observing anger in my practice, noticing anger when it arose, and had gotten pretty good at seeing it in my practice, was pretty able to recognize the anger when it came up. And then at one point, so I got really familiar with that anger, got really familiar with the suffering state of that anger. And then at one point, I was just in my kitchen, I was just, you know, cutting an apple, and I was pretty present. I mean, I wasn't trying to be mindful. I wasn't trying to look at anything. But while I was cutting that apple, I saw a memory of being with the person that I was angry with. And we were at a fruit stand. So the memory, I could see the memory was connected with what I was doing. And then the next thing I recognized was that there was this like freight train of, oh yeah, let's jump on that thought and think more thoughts and to get angry. It was just like this intention, this urge to construct anger in that moment. The anger was not there yet in that moment. It was not yet present. But there was that, like, a whole, it felt like a load of conditioning just pushing me right into that rut of, yeah, get angry. Now, fortunately for my mind at that moment, I'd been paying attention to anger, and the mind knew this was not a happy place to go. And in seeing that intention, in seeing the mind seeing, oh yeah, let's go get angry, some other part of the mind with wisdom said, don't do that. Why go there? That's suffering. It wasn't something I tried to do. It wasn't a conscious, me, willful, saying, oh, don't go to anger. It was the mind with wisdom releasing that intention. So that intention was seen, that intention was released, and the anger did not come up. That was shocking to me. Just that possibility. So it is possible to see intention in very surprising places. Some of these, it's not certainly not something to try to do, to try to see all of the intentions, especially in daily life, but they can reveal themselves at times, especially if you're encouraging yourself by looking at, like for myself, in that time of my life, I had been orienting to look at anger. I had been choosing that. It was kind of something it was a project. It was a daily life project. I want to understand my anger, like the patience project, the impatience project that I talked about. You know, I just pick these things from time to time to explore. And in those explorations, when we kind of orient around something, that's when we can start to see these intentions and see the benefit of exploring this aspect of intention.
You may have answered this.
Is that on? Is that?
I think so. Maybe.
Okay. Could you turn up the volume a little?
Yeah. Okay. Is this better?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, hold it like this. There you go.
This?
Yeah.
Okay. The what I was wondering about was all intentions aren't created equally. And you were talking about a project, anger, and impatience. And what was going through my mind was the notion of deciding to be mindful about certain intentions that could lead us into areas we don't want to venture in.
And using that as a means to for introspection and intervention, as you were describing.
Yes.
So not worry about picking up a glass of water or washing our hands or that type of thing, but only think about a certain class of intentions. And that was one question. And then I was thinking about, it's happened a few times, where I really was feeling mellow. I realized that that was not going to result in the kind of outcome that needed to happen. So I forced myself to start yelling at somebody. But I really wasn't angry.
Uh-huh.
But it was the idea that that was what was needed to trigger the kind of
some
of
kind
attention.
Of motivation.
Well, I needed to get somebody's attention. I realized that doing it in a calm, dispassionate way wasn't going to work. So I needed to inject some extreme emotion into that particular exchange. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess the common term would be a bitch slap. And it worked. Okay, but I really wasn't angry. But I just kind of was able to bring myself to that level for a second, get the message across, and then come down again.
Uh-huh.
And so I was wondering about... I was aware of it. I knew what I was doing. Felt like I was in a play.
Uh-huh.
I was acting.
Uh-huh. So the first question around exploring particular intentions, I found that to be really helpful, especially in daily life. I mean, the intentions around, I found actually the intentions around picking up a glass or sitting up or whatever, that kind of did set the stage in a way. I mean, that time of my practice, I was also doing one of those more neutral tasks, those neutral anchors that we're talking about. You know, so I was at that time, I was noticing when I switched between DOS and Windows on my computer. You know, just a really neutral activity, and just noticing, okay, that's happening right now. How is the experience right now? And so that was going on. So I was beginning to recognize that I could know I was going to do something before I was going to do it. So that was kind of conscious in my mind in that same time where that recognition around the intention with the anger was happening. So I was actually doing both of those two projects simultaneously, that more charged project around looking at anger and that really neutral project around just switching between DOS and Windows on the computer. And I often recommend if you're going to pick something charged, if you're going to pick something that's a habitual tendency that it's like, yeah, I really want to understand this one, it's helpful to have to balance that with something that's a little more neutral in your daily life practice as well. And you don't have to, I mean, you don't have to try to actually see the intention of picking up the glass and all of that. But in the practice of, if you're using, like, standing up, in that process of noticing that activity, you'll probably start to see the intention. You know, just the very fact that you're mindful of it, you'll start to see it. So I think pretty much anything we orient our mindfulness around will begin to reveal intention. And so if we do pick something a little more charged, that will produce a lot of fruit. You know, it will, the noticing the intentions behind light switches and, you know, standing up and sitting down is probably not going to, you know, really get to the core of some of our hooks. But if you pick something, and I often too like to suggest in daily life practice that you pick something you're really interested in exploring in your life, you know, this thing catches me all the time. You know, what's going on there? Not with any kind of an aversive attitude or wanting to get rid of it, but just, yeah, I really want to understand that. You know, what's going on there? When I've chosen that and approached it from that perspective, It's kind of like I just make the resolve. I'm going to be mindful whenever that thing happens. Whenever I get angry, I want to be aware of it. Whenever I get frustrated, I want to be aware of it. Whenever I get impatient, whatever it is that you pick, you know, whatever thing it is that for you is the interesting thing. That exploration, at least in my experience, begins to reveal so much. And those intentions around that do begin to become more clear. And those produce a lot of benefit for us when we see those. We really begin to see, we may begin to see triggers for how we get into a pattern altogether. You know, it's quite interesting to see that. And that's very powerful. So, yeah, in some way you're right. All intentions are not created equal because some have, I think, a lot more. Some of them have that freight train of conditioning behind them. Yes. And some of them are much more neutral. Yeah.
Been here in a while. Yes, I forgot already. You were talking about linking something of a more becoming thought to change behavior if you're feeling like anger or something like that, I think. Pardon me? Can you hear me?
I didn't quite understand what you said.
Oh, well, probably because I'm not understanding what's going on in my head. But anger is a very interesting thing that I'm interested in exploring as well, from the standpoint of being around other people who are appearing to make me feel like they're very angry. And so with that discomfort, I tend to feel very comfortable feeling compassion for that. But it's very easy. That's a very comfortable place to feel compassion, but it's really tricky to just be in that safe place of compassion rather than thinking, well, this is a very unpleasant thing. So I was wondering if you could talk some more about, weren't you saying something about linking a more positive...
The purpose, linking it into our actions?
Yes, so that your action might be toned down a bit if you're feeling, you just kind of, you know, tone that down so it's more appealing behavior.
Well, so there were two things I talked about. There was one about like not allowing the impatience to leak out into my activity. Was that the one, or was it when I talked about reflecting on our deeper purpose, our higher intention, and seeing if that might be able to inform our actions?
I think it was the leaking out of the
into the body?
Into the body, yeah. Okay. I think it was that, what you were thinking of, coming up with another thought to see if it could kind of tone down the impatience a little bit. So I'm saying the toning down, a sense of being around angry people is just unpleasant, it really can shift that by just having compassion for people.
Yes,
and
yes.
And sometimes that may or may not be appropriate.
The compassion may not be appropriate?
It may. Well, right. Using the example of if somebody isn't hearing you, or I mean some people use a technique, I guess, of I don't know what I'm saying.
So I'm trying to think. Can you? Is there some example that you could offer?
Okay. I guess witnessing an injustice, witnessing disharmony with other people,
yeah,
and feeling very uncomfortable that you have to witness that, and then instead of sitting with, that's very uncomfortable. Who wants to sit there? Feeling compassion is all you can do, but it's. It's a pattern, rather than maybe being more proactive in trying to...
actually take some action.
Be assertive and seeing if some justice can happen.
So, sometimes, I mean, I think the place there to explore is, rather than being passive, I mean, thinking that being aware, mindful, means being passive, compassion is actually a quite an active emotion. You know, that if we're seeing an injustice, you know, sometimes we might think, well, I need to be angry in order to act, to do something about that injustice. But there's a way that we can act out of compassion too. You know, that the compassion can arise. So typically we seem to orient towards the person who's perpetrating the injustice and, you know, get angry at that. And then it's kind of like our activity gets directed from that place of anger. But if we can reframe it, and I think that bringing in some sense of compassion, but rather than having that compassion be, oh, settle back, you might see if you can, if you feel that intention to act, can you bring in that intention of compassion instead of anger in the action? Orient towards the compassion, you know, that it's a compassionate action both to prevent the injustice, to prevent the harm coming to that person, and to prevent the person from making the harm, that it's compassionate for both sides. So, you know, compassion actually can be a very active emotion. I would agree with you that it may not be appropriate to just sit back. You know, there are definitely times when we see something happening and, you know, just sitting there noting, oh, seeing is not appropriate. If you, you know, see a child starting to run out into the street and there's an oncoming car, you're not going to just go, oh, seeing, fear. You're going to take action, you know, try to get that kid out of the way of the oncoming car. And that's, some of it may be motivated out of fear, but it's also motivated out of the sense of wanting to protect that child. So, you know, definitely our practice, and this is a place I think where this teaching around intention can be misunderstood in a way that, oh, just notice your intentions, don't act on them. The suggestion here is notice your intentions, see if you can notice when there's unskillful motivation accompanying that intention, and see if you can connect with instead a more skillful motivation. So compassion is a skillful motivation. There are several, you know, really beautiful motivations: love, compassion, joy, generosity. These are beautiful ethical conduct. These are beautiful motivations to act from. So it's not necessarily that we just notice our intentions and don't do anything. And at times we're going to have to act with mixed motivations. This is absolutely going to happen. I mean, until our minds are completely free of greed, aversion, and delusion, which is a long time for all of us, you know, we are going to be acting out of greed, aversion, and delusion. Sometimes what I like to say for people is that when you see yourself getting ready to act out of mixed motivations, because we do, you know, it's like we offer something to somebody. There's a generosity of spirit, and there's a wish to get something in return. You know, so there's a little bit of craving, a little bit of greed in that movement of generosity. That doesn't mean you shouldn't give the thing to the person. It means you should recognize that there's a little bit of wanting associated with that movement of generosity, but also recognizing the generosity itself, recognizing that that action does come out of a place of generosity, and also seeing perhaps if you might be able to connect with the wholesome wish for giving more than the, oh yeah, I really want to get something back. Just kind of almost like landing a little bit more strongly on the skillful side of the intention than the unskillful. Yeah, we're definitely going to have mixed motivations, and just kind of like, you know, seeing the unskillful, being honest with ourselves. I guess that's the key, really being honest with ourselves. Yes, there is some unskillful motivation here. And then seeing what happens as our lives unfold. To me, it feels like, you know, it's kind of like used to be a lot of unskillful motivation going on. Maybe some skillful, but I wasn't really conscious of the skillful stuff. Then as I started to practice, I began to be really aware of the unskillful motivations and some of the skillful motivations. And now it's kind of like I think the balance has shifted a little bit. There's still unskillful motivations happening, but there's a lot more skillful motivations happening. So it's just the practice of seeing the unskillful motivation, seeing the consequences, has allowed the mind to let go of some of those. So there's fewer of those now, and there's more of the wholesome. It's a slow process. So we need to stop. Thank you.